financial literacy, and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Rayum.
What's the argument? Tell me that.
Oh, just really quick. My car's got about 145,000 miles on it right now. But I paid it off last year. So I've had like a year of no payments. She thinks I'm rolling the dice every time I drive it because a big repair could come up. And I say, well, sure it could, but I've saved a year's worth of payments. So that's where we are.
Hi, it's Frances. I just wanted to take a minute to thank you for watching this video. If you're catching us on YouTube, please help us help others by clicking like, subscribe, and all notifications so you don't miss any videos. And check back for the next video. I think you're going to love it. Thanks again. For more information, you can visit us at hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Rayum. Hi.
Hi, Jess. How are you?
I am doing good. And what are we talking about today?
Well, you know, you might have a big decision to make. Your car might be on its last legs. You might be, you know, have a lease that's ending and thinking about, you know, are you going to lease again? What are you going to do? So should you lease again? Should you buy something new? Should you buy something used? Maybe you're thinking you're going to save up a little money and buy a used car. And that's really the heart of it, isn't it? Is you need a car.
Yeah, it's really interesting too, because I was just having this conversation / argument with my sister yesterday. So we'll talk about that coming up and you can tell me who's right.
Oh, well, that would be very interesting. Okay.
I'll put you in the middle of some family drama.
Why not? I'm kind of used to that. So you need a car in some way. You're just trying to be smart about it. But between the monthly payments, the stress level involved, no matter how happy you are about it, and all the opinions that are flying around, your sisters, the dealers, whatever, it's really hard to feel confident in your decision, I think.
For sure. And then also right now with the tariffs, like, is it a bad time to buy? Like, you know, that kind of weighs into it a little bit too.
Everything weighs into it.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is this is one of the biggest decisions that you'll make and one of the most emotional decisions you'll make. It wasn't that big of a deal when a car cost you, you know, a used car was $1,000 and you could get a beater and a new car was, you know, $5,000, right? That wasn't that big of a deal. But now cars are costing, you know, a quarter or 20% of what a house costs. It might be your house down payment.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
You're trying to build forever just to buy a car.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a big decision now. I did recently have someone call me with this decision, even though they watched our videos that were about, do you buy a used or new and do you lease or not? You get firsthand how emotional this purchase is. So, you know, you smell that new car smell, you picture yourself driving off the lot. The thing that we need to do is slow this down just a little bit. I know you might have to make this decision fairly quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes people's cars just...
on the last leg.
They just die. Or they just completely, they're just, you're at the mechanics and whatever repairs need to be done are so catastrophic that they don't make sense to do.
Mm-hmm.
Now your plan of I'm going to save up and buy a car or I'm going to get a car when this car has 20,000 more miles on it 1 year later is out the window, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so now you have to do it. So today's show is not about telling you what you should do. Did you hear me, Jess? This is not about telling you what you should do. It's about giving you a way to see your options more clearly so that you have the tools you need to make whatever choice ends up feeling like the right one for you.
Okay. So when should you think about buying versus leasing, or is it always a bad idea to not... is it always a bad idea to buy new, I guess is my question.
Didn't I just say we're not telling you what you should do?
Yes, but, you know, there's always that temptation for a brand new car, but then you hear like, as soon as you drive off the lot, it depreciates $10,000 or whatever. Then it just seems like that's a bad decision, although it's tempting.
That's exactly right. And what you've just said in a nutshell is why we're talking about this today. So we're going to address all of that and give you the tools you need to have so that you know, is it a right decision for you to buy new or used or to lease or buy, okay? Because buying a car is not just about the money, right? It's about safety, reliability, pride, right? Sometimes status, even, right? Sometimes people want that car. It is exciting, to get a new car or to think about buying a new car. But it is also, as I said, really emotional. And so, even though you might love that new car smell, and you might love the idea of telling all your friends what you bought and pulling up to work and having people come out and look at it. I mean, we go through all of these things, right? I drive. I know what cars are like for me, But it's also about fear. And that's what was driving a conversation I had very recently with a client who was in this position. They had to buy a car. Well, most people say they have to, and there's another solution. No, this guy had to buy a car. Okay. And so the fear of, well, what do you th fear? Taking on too much of a loan, right? Getting stuck with a lemon, making the wrong choice for your future. You thought it was okay now, but something happens a year or two down the road. You don't feel so good about it. So most people don't make their car decisions with confidence. They make them with a sense of urgency. If you think about every time you've bought a car, I mean, nobody wants to go and pay $48,000 for their car. Nobody wants to do that. So you put it off as long as you can. Or you go the route of a lease, which we'll talk about too. Is one better than another? No, they're different than one another.
Okay. I will say too, just to add to the emotion part, part of it I notice, especially with the younger generation, I'm just thinking about my son. It's the new tech in each car. Like a brand new model always has some cool upgrade. So it's wanting that. So it's not necessarily, you want it to be brand new. It's because it's kind of like a CD re-release where they add a new song. They add like one cool feature and all of a sudden you have to have that model.
Yeah, well, I'd love to get somebody who, deals with social aspects to talk about that, because I think what you just described is where we've come in our country or maybe in the world about wanting that. We used to say keeping up with the Joneses. Nobody says that anymore for a number of reasons, probably, but wanting to be on the edge all the time, always wanting to have the newest, best, always wanting to be first. Greed really leads, especially here in America. That sense of urgency I was talking about, coupled with any of those things, even without greed, right? That's where it gets really expensive. That's where you make choices you might not have made otherwise. So, the leasing thing can be very appealing. Right? It's a lower payment, lower monthly payment. You still get that new car smell, right? But with a lower hassle. It's really easy to just go to a dealership, and as long as you get approved for your credit for the lease, you can lease a car without much down payment, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, let's pause on that for one second because something you said was really interesting. I've always heard that leases, you have to have great credit to be able to do a lease. So it feels like it's an unfair advantage for people that, have really great credit scores.
I've not found that to be true necessarily. What I have found to be true is that I told myself I wasn't going to beat up on dealers because they're doing their job, right? And they fill a necessary void. But let me paint a scenario. You go to a dealer, they sense that you have a sense of urgency or not. I don't want to make them out to be villains, right? But you find a car you like. Oh, I want this with all the bells and whistles. It's more car than you can afford monthly. What are your options? The guy selling you the car is going to say you can buy less car, right? Which you don't want because you've fallen in love with this wonderful rolling piece of art. Or we can get you into this car with a lease. You'll lease it. And here's the mantra. You're only going to pay for the part of the car you use. You're only going to pay taxes on the part of the car that you're using. Okay?
It's always a catch at the end too, because most often you go over the miles and then you have a choice of either paying this big amount of money or buying the car outright or getting stuck in another lease. I shouldn't say stuck in because you might want to be in a lease.
You might. I love how I have an idea planned out for these shows. It's always loose. And then something you say makes me think about something else. There is a little thing I just thought of. This is like a little money doctor moment where I tell you the things nobody tells you, right? And most of them come from personal experience. Everybody says, oh, you got a PhD in finance, you know everything. Believe me, most of what I'm telling you comes from the school of hard knocks, okay? And this is one of them. I leased a Mini Cooper the first year they were out. Now, I leased that car because it was the first year they were out. And I was afraid of bugs, not insects, problems, okay? And so I thought, well, I'm going to lease it. And then if there's a problem
Well,
with it, yeah, then they're going to handle it. But I also drove a lot of miles. And so a lease was not an optimal thing for me to do. But in digging into the fine print, which is what I always recommend people do, and asking the right questions of a dealer who actually, steered me correctly, what I learned was I could take the lease with a 15,000 mile a year number right now. But if before a certain date, and I don't remember what it was, I think it was 2 years or 2.5 years into the lease, it was quite a ways in. If before that date I found that I was driving more than those miles and I was worried about getting penalized, up until that date, I could add more miles. I had to pay for them.
Oh, I've never heard of this.
I know, this is why I'm telling you, I had never heard of it either. But I called the dealer and I said, look, I'm at, however many miles and I'm going to go over. I want to buy these miles. And at that time, I could buy them for something like a quarter a mile. And the government was reimbursing me like 48 cents a mile for my work, right? So it totally made sense for me. I did, in fact, buy more miles so that I wouldn't pay the higher penalty. It's kind of like getting gas when you return your rental car.
Rental
Are
car,
you going to put the gas in or are you going to let them do it, right? So I put the gas in. I bought the miles and it saved me a fortune. And then I liked the car well enough that I sold that car outright. I bought the lease out. I sold the car. I actually did well on it, believe it or not, because it was a hot car that everybody wanted. And I bought another car. I actually bought another Mini Cooper. But anyway, you could check your lease contract if you're already in one and see if that's a possibility. But I digress into tips. So the thing that people are often missing is what you're talking about. At the end of the lease, you're faced with the same problem. Now, you might have a penalty if you just want to walk away from the car. Sometimes it's $500 or $1,000 if you're not going to buy out the car. There are nice things about the lease, like you know what the buyout will be, and you know that some repairs are going to be covered and all of that. But the tough thing is you're always making a payment. And again, I used to believe this, okay? I used to, because I could get a write-off for my business. Most of our tax write-offs are gone now, but at that time, I could get a write-off for my business. I could drive a nice car for not much money, and I had driven clunkers a lot of my life. I am mechanically inclined, not a mechanic, but I'm mechanically inclined, and between myself and my friends, we could always kind of keep them running, right? But I was tired of it. I just wanted to get in a car, turn the key, have a reliable car, and go somewhere. And it was at a time in my life where I really couldn't afford a huge payment. And
And
so
for the most part, with a lease, they will fix it if something goes wrong on it.
the
So
basic
that's a
stuff
little bit
is,
of peace of mind.
that's right, the basic stuff is covered, but so would it be on a new car with a warranty? You'd have similar coverage. So anyway, I was leasing and I got trapped in that place that people get trapped in long before I ever did what I do now for a living, right? And I was thinking, boy, every time I lease, my lease is up and I go on to get another car, my lease payment goes up. Well, of course it goes up. The price of cars is going up. So if you're going to lease professionally, right, like a professional student, if you're going to do that consistently, you need to be prepared for how much your price is going to go up over and over and over again. So there is a way to win the game, of course. And we'll talk about exactly what that is, to get the best of both worlds. But you brought up the major points. You're often locked into a mileage limit. If you go over, you pay dearly on it. Massachusetts on a lease, because we're in Massachusetts, and in many states, you still pay sales tax on the full monthly lease payment. So a lease payment of $300, we're at 6.25% tax. That's $318.75 because of the sales tax, right? But you don't own that car. If the car gets totaled, or somebody steals it, you may need to have gap insurance. There's a lot of things to cover. So we'll talk about that, but also whether to buy new or used and how your sister whether your sister or you are right about this decision.
All right, let's get your phone number in the meantime.
Of course, it's 413-773-3333.
Or you can visit hugyourmoney.com. We'll be back with part two of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram on WHMP.
Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor is underwritten by Franklin County Technical School. We build futures. Visit fcts.us or call 413-863-9561.
Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram. Hi.
Hi, I'm sharing with all our listeners all the stupid things I've done in my life about my and why I'm qualified to help you figure this out, believe it or not. So just before the break, we were talking about leasing and all the things that come along with that. And a couple of things that, I started to talk about were things like gap insurance. So most leases require you to buy gap insurance, okay? So if your car gets totaled while you owe it, while you own it, and it's worth more than your insurance is going to pay, they require you to have gap insurance. Now, if you buy it through the dealer, or you probably have it and don't even know it, believe me, if you, believe it or not, if you've gotten a lease, it's probably packed right into your little payment. So take a look at your contract. If you get it through the dealer, it's going to cost you $400 to $800, probably slapped on top of your purchase or on top of your lease price and factored into your payment. If you get it privately through your insurance company, it's probably between $2 and $8 a month.
Oh, wow.
But you could
That's good to know.
save
Yeah, you can
yourself a
save a
little money
bunch.
there on gap insurance.
Now, if you've already got a lease and you go back and check, can you take the gap off of that and then go through, or no, you had to do it at the
I
beginning?
think it's already in your lease payment. I bet you
Okay, got
ask. I
it.
mean, there's never any harm in saying, "Hey, I learned this." It's a phone call, or an email. You could
Yeah.
always ask, yeah. So just knowing those kinds of things ahead of time can save you a lot of money. Okay. Let's talk about buying, especially new versus used. Now,
Okay.
I'm going to tell you what you need to know, and then I'm going to tell you how it works in Hugland. Okay. Because you may be very surprised to find that you can afford more car than you thought and pay it off sooner. Now, one of my favorite things to do is to help people solve this car problem in a way that they're really happy. All of that being said, there are times when you simply need a car, it has to be reliable, and you cannot afford the payment on something new or used that is in very good condition. And in those instances, I sometimes will recommend a lease for somebody, but with the caveat that you keep the lease payment. I told you there was a way to win this game. You keep the lease payment as low as you possibly can. You don't buy your dream car on a lease. You get a car that is adequate, that will get you through the next 3 years. Maybe you don't love it. It doesn't have every bell and whistle, but the lease payment is $200 a month or whatever, and you can afford it. And you might be able to start from that point and plan forward to make a down payment, improve your credit, get to the next level. But don't lease and forget that you leased unless you want to be stuck in a payment. And I'm going to use that word, stuck in a payment forever. Okay. And that's really the way you win the game. You never lease more car than you could afford to buy.
Okay. Quick question
Possible.
on that. Should you put money down in a lease?
You'll be required to put some down with some leases. There's no way around it for some leases, unless you have like a zero down lease thing. And should you, you know what? Putting money down on a lease does check how much it lowers your payments. It usually doesn't lower your payments by enough to change your life. And the money you're putting down, if that was your emergency cash reserve, that might change your life. So balance that out. Yeah. So whether you buy new or used, okay, used cars can make a lot of sense. For a number of reasons. I mean, we all know what they are. They're lower sticker price. There's less depreciation, more flexibility, but there's a trade-off, okay? The interest rates on used cars are often higher than on new cars. And the terms for your loans are often shorter than on new cars. So the payment on a used car can be fairly similar or closer, can ease in closer to the payment on a new car because of those things. because of a lower interest rate and a longer term on a new car, sometimes those payments, otherwise people wouldn't buy them, can be appealing compared to a used car. Okay. Plus, repair costs might hit you a little sooner on a used car. With a new car, you might get a lower interest rate, 7-year loan, whatever, right? So you get more manageable payments. At first blush, that longer term loan can seem scary. Right? Now, remember, I said I'm not telling you what you should do, and I'm really not. Any of these options might be the right option for anyone listening.
Okay.
Whether they're the right option for you or not, we don't know yet. Okay. So that longer term loan can seem really scary. I'm going to take out a loan for $28,000 and it's going to be for 7 years and I'm going to make this payment. But ironically, it can work in your favor. It can work in your favor. I'll get to how, but let's first go over a little bit of math on it. Now, it's always hard to do math on the air because, many people just bristle at the thought of math. But it's necessary in this case, I think, and I'll go slowly, and I think everyone will get this concept.
Okay.
Let's say that you're deciding between a $28,000 new car with a 7-year loan, and the rate is 5.9%. Okay, so that's going to give you a monthly payment of $407.70. Call it 400 bucks for ease of figuring. Okay.
Okay.
Or a $16,000 used car with a 5-year loan at 7.5%. These are pretty typical numbers. Okay.
Okay.
So more expensive new car, longer loan, lower interest. Less expensive used car, shorter loan, higher interest. Okay. Start to feel where I'm going here. All right. The used car is cheaper up front, right? 16,000 versus 28,000, but not by that much in a month-to-month payment because your used car payment is about $320,
Okay.
$321 to be exact. So $320 for the used car, $407 for the new car. All right, that's not the win, but I just want to point out that because of the terms of these loans, that's the beginning of what makes the difference. Okay. Here's the key. In real life, your car payment doesn't exist in a vacuum, right? Most people make these decisions like it was their decisions about debt, right? Like checkers versus chess. Okay. So most people have credit cards, student loans, mortgages, other things. Yet they're deciding about their car as a one-off. Isolated, we say, which car decision do we make? In fact, that's where the real opportunity lies. That's what we do for a living, right? Is to turn that checker game into a chess game.
Okay.
Instead of treating your debt like you're jumping checker pieces, instead of that, we're working it like a chess game. We're looking out 5, 10, 15, 20 moves ahead. How will this affect your overall picture? Because we don't tell you what kind of car to buy. I don't want to tell somebody what kind of car to buy, right? But we do help you see how that fits into your entire financial picture. Let's say your total monthly debt payments are $3,000 a month.
Okay.
Okay, including your new car, all your debts, including your new car. If our algorithm helps you pay off all your debt 6 months faster, which it would, because at some point the car becomes a priority debt and gets what we call margin. That's the money you have because you paid off some debts already and speeds up everything behind it. If our plan helps you pay that off 6 months earlier, $3,000 a month in payments, 6 months savings is 18 grand. That's what you're avoiding in payments. That means that $28,000 car, just by utilizing our system, as long as that $400 payment is affordable for you, all of the things that we help you look for, right? That means you've saved $18,000. That means that might feel like a $10,000 car to you in hindsight, in real life impact. All right, it's always difficult to try to explain the math to people without just saying, look, it's different. That's why we have a patent, okay? You're going to have to trust me on this and go to the website, just plug in your numbers, hit the button, and you will see without talking to a person whether what I'm telling you is true or not and where those loans land, okay? Buying a car is never It's never about just buying a car. Right? We think it is.
Yeah,
It's
there's more to
really,
it.
yeah, it's really about your future. Right? And with HUG, it's this, we call it HUG instead of hug your money for short. So with HUG, it's just making smart vehicle decisions. I promised to let you talk about your sister and you. And what's the argument? Tell me that.
Oh, just really quick. My car's got about 145,000 miles on it right now. But I paid it off last year. So I've had like a year of no payments. She thinks I'm rolling the dice every time I drive it because a big repair could come up. And I say, well, sure it could, but I've saved a year's worth of payments. So that's where we are.
Well, I don't want to get a family fight started here. But yeah, the truth is, I think so here's the caveat from me. When you
Okay.
say I've saved a year's worth of payments, have you just stopped making the payments and absorbed it into everyday expenses, or are you actually stashing those payments into an account?
Oh, that's so funny, Dr. Francis.
Why?
I mean, have you met the kids? Of course I'm spending it.
Okay. Well, again, how to win the game. Both you and your sister have a point, okay?
Okay.
I wouldn't say either one of you is right. I would lean more heavily.
But you can, but
more thinking.
You could if you wanted to. Go ahead.
Well, I know you have this sparring thing with her, but I would lean more heavily toward your camp in that you are able to, you know, buying a car because something might come up is not, at 140,000, you're getting up there, but it's certainly not on its last legs unless it's been treated really badly, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the guy I just talked to had 240,000 on his
Oh,
vehicle.
wow. Okay.
And he went for a repair and, you know, tried to drive it out, and there was another major problem, and he was like, okay, I got to do this.
Yeah.
And it was major. But at 140,000, you know, maintain it, drive it if you like the car. But do what we're telling you to do, Jess. If you were in our portal, that money would have been recommended to go to the next debt, and that debt would then get paid off faster and faster.
All joking aside, I've used it to pay off some credit cards and stuff.
Thank you. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's the thing to do is that oh, I don't want to, you know, that's up to you to say, not for me to say on the air. So if you were saving these payments into a side fund for the next down payment on the next car, it's not too late to start that, by the way, Jess.
Okay.
Pretend that you're still making that payment. I don't care if you have to automate it in your account to deposit your checking account into that side fund for the car. Fine. Even if all it does is pay for your repairs, that's worth doing.
All right. Well, what I've got from this is that I'm right. My sister's wrong. So thank you very much. I'll let her know that the money doctor said so.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait for that phone call.
I mean, I think we need a part two of this conversation because we're out of time, but really good tips. Any last thoughts on this?
Yeah, read the fine print. Don't buy with your heart. Walk away from the dealer for a moment. I don't care if you have to go have lunch, whatever. Make a phone call, get on our website, do whatever you got to do to get the information you need. This is a big decision and you want to make it wisely and enjoy driving that new vehicle and not be driving it around thinking, oh, what have I done?
All right, let's get your phone number.
Sure, 413-773-3333.
And you can always go to hugyourmoney.com. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jess.
Underwritten by Hug Your Money. Hug Your Money, where financial wellness gets personal.
Financial literacy and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Raham.
You're right.
I guess I was talking about if Jerome drops it from Jerome, like we're buddies, if Jerome dropped it from 4.25 to whatever percent
to one,
he wants it dropped to one.
To one, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the idea behind it. I mean, that's the sell is, look, if I just tell the Fed to lower this interest rate, we're going to pay less in interest and everybody's going to be happy.
Right.
That's great if you're the government, not so great if you're us. Hi, it's Francis. I just wanted to take a minute to thank you for watching this video. If you're catching us on YouTube, please help us help others by clicking like, subscribe, and all notifications so you don't miss any videos. And check back for the next video. I think you're going to love it. Thanks again.
For more information, you can visit us at hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the money doctor, Dr. Francis Ram. Hi.
You know,
what are we talking about today?
We're talking about what might be possible, understanding Trump, the Fed, and the debt.
You know, we only have 28 minutes, right?
Yeah, well, but we're going to do this in layman's terms, because really what I find is that most people have a sense for, you know, debt bad, right?
Mm-hmm.
Money good,
yeah.
Debt bad, even if it's the country. You know, we have all this debt. Isn't this awful? The national debt. What are we going to do about the debt, the debt, the debt? I wonder how many people really understand what that debt is when we're talking about it. So we're going to use some analogies today about how this might affect your household and how this is similar to what goes on in your household budget. We are talking about why President Trump is pushing so hard for big interest rate cuts and what they could really mean for your wallet. Okay.
Right. Do we want to start with the biggest question, which is, if we do owe this money, which we hear about it all the time, who exactly do we owe it to? Is it China? Is it one place? Is it multiple places? And what are we going to do if that debt gets called in?
Well, let's break it down in everyday terms, right? Let's go through some key points, and I promise we will get to your question because it's a really important one. But the first thing is, what's actually happening? Why are we talking about this on Financial Fitness today? And basically, President Trump wants the Federal Reserve to slash those short-term interest rates. Short-term interest rates. We're talking about rates that would affect buying a car, taking out a personal loan, something for a year. But pay attention, because your long-term interest rates may move in the opposite direction. So he wants the Federal Reserve, Jerome Powell, essentially, who he's blaming for things already, and that may be part of this, to chop those rates from about 4.25% where they are now down to 1%. Now, that's the kind of an emergency move that the Fed would usually take during a recession or a financial meltdown. Most experts don't think we're there, at least not yet. So that's what's so disturbing, is this sort of swipe of a pen. You know, I want you to change these interest rates and drop them from 4.25% to 1%. So why does he want to drop those rates so low if we're not in an emergency situation? And I promise I'm going to let you ask that question again, but I think a little background is helpful here.
Mm-hmm.
I think what he's thinking, and, you know, who am I to decide what he's thinking, right? But the consensus is he wants to make it cheaper for the government. That, believe it or not, that was the United States calling me. I'm sure that's a scam phone call. Pretty sure it's a scam phone call, but that was pretty darn funny. Okay. So I think
he knows you're talking about him, Francis.
You know, why would I not be surprised about that? Okay. So I think what he wants to do is to make it cheaper for the government to borrow money to pay off old debts. What? We do this in our households, and I complain about it, right? Borrow money to pay off old debts. All right. To try to give a slowing economy a boost. Now, what I mean by that is there are signs that the economy is slowing. And when you drop the interest rate, the rate at which people are able to borrow, right, they borrow more money and they buy more stuff.
Right.
On debt. Okay, on debt. But this is the thinking from economists in general, is when you drop those interest rates, you will give a slowing economy a boost. That may be what he has in mind. But again, as far as the economists I've listened to and researched, nobody seems to think we're in this emergency situation like we were during COVID or the housing bubble. So that's what's so disturbing, is why is he wanting that rate drop so drastically right now? The other side of the coin is possibly it's a little bit personal to set up the Fed chairman, Jerome Powell, as a fall guy if things get worse. In other words, Trump could always say, I wanted him to drop those interest rates to 1% and he wouldn't do it. So it's his fault.
Right.
All right. We'll talk about what the risk of that is. But your question is, if we already owe all this debt, the government owes this debt, who the heck do they owe it to? Right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, are we like going to China going, hey, we want to buy some new missiles, why don't you give us some money?
Right. And also, geopolitical relations aren't so great right now between China and the US. So, does that play into
Jess Tyler with a geopolitical reference. I love it. What have we done to you, Jess? Okay. So mostly we owe the debt to investors. Hang in there. Okay. To investors who buy U.S. Treasury bonds.
Okay.
Does that seem weird? Right.
Yeah.
In the financial world, we talk about equity and debt, and we talk about equity are stocks and debt are things like bonds, right? Bills. So investors that are buying those US Treasury bonds are doing it to keep themselves safe. Now, here's where
Investors, are you talking people or are you talking countries?
we are talking basically everything from your grandmother's 401k or a pension fund to foreign governments. So
Okay.
banks buy these bond these US Treasury bonds, right? Pension
Okay.
funds buy them, insurance companies buy them, foreign governments like China and Japan buy them, even the regular Americans through their regular old retirement accounts, right? Buy them. It's part of your diversification to try to buy some safe stuff
Okay.
along with your risky stuff. And right from the top, places do this, right? Including foreign countries. So they buy these US Treasury bonds to protect themselves. That point has to be driven home. They're buying our bonds to protect themselves from risk. Okay. Now,
Okay.
when the old bonds expire, bonds have a certain period of time. They're good for 5, 10, 20, whatever the time limit is on the bonds, right? When an old bond expires, the government pays those back by selling new ones. Now,
Okay.
I promised you analogies because this is really, if you aren't into finance, this is going to sound crazy.
Well, it
But
sounds kind of like a pyramid scheme to me, like you're a little bit. No?
well,
Okay.
okay, but it's the way it works. It is kind of crazy and it is kind of like a pyramid scheme in a way, I guess. But think of it in terms of your own finances. It's like rolling over an old loan into a new loan with a different interest rate, right? So you
Right.
have your
Okay.
mortgage at 6.5% and rates go down, right?
Yeah.
Which is what he's saying he wants to do. He wants to push those rates down. And then you're going to refinance at 3%. Okay. So think of it like having a giant credit card that never really goes away. You pay it off. You open a new one, hopefully with a better rate, but you haven't solved the problem. You still owe the debt.
Right.
And the interest, I'll probably give the stat again, the interest on the debt that the United States owes is more than $1 trillion a year.
Oh,
The interest, Jess. Now, to
yeah.
put this into perspective, the Social Security, the amount of money that we spend on Social Security is only $1.4 trillion a year.
So
So
the interest
just,
is almost as much as.
yeah. So people are talking about, you know, will they cut Social Security? Geez, if we could just wrangle in the debt, it would be great, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So I hope that answered your question about who this money is really owed to. But just understand that when we're talking about debt, it isn't that the United States went out and bought a bunch of stuff, you know, like we would do and call it debt. But they sell those US Treasury bonds to countries and to people who want to protect themselves from risk. And in doing that, it creates a debt of
Okay.
which has an interest due on it of more than $1 trillion a year.
And it keeps growing and growing and growing every year.
And it keeps growing every year because we aren't touching the principal like we would be on our own personal debts if we did something, you know, like our system or some other way to pay down debt. Does
Okay.
that help?
It,
I
yeah, it
hope.
actually really does. If you,
Okay.
yes, equate it to the credit card makes sense to me.
Oh, good. Good. So what's the real risk in this, I guess? Right?
Yeah, it sounds like if
What's
you're getting a lower interest rate, you're going to get a lower payment. So that seems like initially people are happy about that.
Well, we're not making that payment, right? The government is making that payment, right? They're trying making it outward. So
You're right.
I guess I was talking about the, if Jerome drops it from Jerome, like we're buddies, if Jerome dropped it from 4.25 to how, whatever percent to one, he wants it dropped to one.
To one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the idea behind it. I mean, that's the sell is, look, if I just tell the Fed to lower this interest rate, we're going to pay less in interest and everybody's going to be happy.
Right.
That's great if you're the government, not so great if you're us.
Okay.
Lower rates can push inflation higher.
Yeah, that means we don't want that.
It means your groceries, your gas, everything else could get a lot pricier. So, you know, when I was talking about if you just refinance your credit cards or your mortgage, yes, you might get a lower interest rate. But the thing is, it doesn't solve the main problem. This is something that every president since we've had debt has had to deal with, and none of them have done it successfully so far, really, right? Some people wrangle it down a little bit, but here it is, $1 trillion a year in interest. You know, if you scaled that down to household finance, you'd still be having a fit over the amount of interest you'd be paying. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't solve the main problem. The government owes too much debt. That's it. When people are trying to buy bonds, U.S. Treasury bonds, to keep themselves safe, they're doing it as a hedge, right? They're doing it to protect themselves from risk.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to buy a bond from somebody who's overloaded with debt and can barely pay the interest payments or maybe not make the interest payments?
So that means that people are going to slow down wanting to buy those bonds.
It means a lot of things. It means our rates to borrow money from other places is going to go up.
Ugh.
Because, right? Because we look riskier.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So it's just, it's a creepy situation to be in. I think that, you know, we obviously we'll have to talk more about this in the second half, but I guess I just want to hit one more thing before we go to break, which is how much will Trump's tariffs actually harm us, right?
Yeah, I think that's the thing most people want to know. You know, it sounds good in theory, you know, the tariffs making other countries pay more until you realize that means we're going to pay more.
Yeah, there's so many things to I hate to use this term unpack because everybody uses it, but there's so many things to unfold and go over here. And I just want to make sure that we're doing them in sort of layman's terms, which is why we're talking about what that debt actually is, that it's U.S. Treasury bonds, right? But, you know, we can only guess about the tariffs because the news keeps changing all the time. But economists estimate that the tariffs could raise the inflation by about a percentage point. So if it's at 2.4 now, that means if the tariffs could bump it up to maybe 3.4, 3.5 over time, that means you're paying out 3.5% more on everything you're buying. Yet the job market is weakening. Go ahead.
Is there a rate that inflation gets up to that then you call it a depression or a recession?
Typically we try to keep inflation at around 2 to 2.5% a year.
Okay.
There are more things than just the rate getting up to call it a recession or a depression, but hopefully we are far away from a depression. Recession is always very scary to people when we say that word because they hear the Great Depression in their head. But we go in and out of recessions often, and sometimes it is a way for the market to pull back and put us back on our feet. It's never pleasant. Nobody likes it. But it's sort of part of the natural flow of things. We have recessions a lot. Sometimes they last a few months and nobody even notices. Sometimes they last years, yeah.
Well, let's talk more about this coming up and much more, I know. But first, I want to get your phone number.
Of course, it's 413-773-3333.
All right, and coming up, we'll have part two of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram on WHMP.
Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor is underwritten by Franklin County Technical School. We build futures. Visit fcts.us or call 413-863-9561.
Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram. Hi.
Hi, Jess. Are you hanging in there with me?
Yeah, it's big topics today, but this is very helpful, like equating it with your regular credit card. And it makes sense in my head when you do it that way to me.
I hope so. I think that it's important, very important for Americans to have a grip on what's really going on. You know, we tend to hear little sound bites on the news and we repeat them. And, you know, I'm guilty of it as well as anybody. I've said for years, you know, if China calls our notes, we're done. And people always agree with me. Oh, yeah. But I wonder how many people really know what that means, right? So when we talk about the debt, the tariffs, the idea that President Trump wants to have the Federal Reserve push those interest rates down from 4.25% to 1%, I can't stress enough how drastic a move that would be. Typically, we drop by a quarter of a point. When we drop by a half a point at a time, people get a little twitchy. Dropping by 3.25 points is like catastrophic. Yeah.
Again, I know we talked a little bit about this in the first half, but if you can explain to me again or add on to initially when you hear that borrowing rates are going to be cheaper, it makes you happy. So I know you said there's a lot of risks involved with that. So yes, you still owe the same amount in debt. I get that part. What other things, though, should make us concerned? Because really, sure. I think most people are going to be like, oh, it sounds great.
Yeah. So, right. Why would that? What's the risk in that, right? The government gets a lower rate to issue new debt at or buy or pay off old debt, right? They refinance at a lower rate. This is a thing that Trump used often in his own businesses, you know, and many of us have, you know, you have some debt that you owe, it's at a higher interest rate, so you refinance it at a lower rate. But you probably are aware that most of the time when you do that, things change, all right? If I were to give you an analogy of a mortgage, for instance, yes, you can refinance it at a lower rate, but you're going to start paying interest at the top again, right? All your interest is front loaded on those loans. So you go back to that clock ticking all over again when maybe you were really chipping away at the debt in the first place, right? If you had your mortgage 7 or 8 years, there may be a fee for refinancing it. And it may affect other things like your credit report. Okay. So you go and you refinance your loan and a year later you want to do it again. You refinance your loan again. If there was just a human looking at it, you could say, well, I did it because I got a lower interest rate. But the fact of the matter is the credit reporting bureaus, or in the case of the country, the credit agencies, are looking at that in terms of risk. Why are they pushing interest rates down? Why are they refinancing? What is going on? And so they look at that and they do what they've just done. All three credit agencies have downgraded, I get the willies when I say it, have downgraded the United States. I don't think we've been downgraded. S&P 500 downgraded us in 2011, I think, when there was a fight over the debt ceiling, right? But all three now, Moody's, S&P, and Fitch, have all downgraded the U.S. So, for instance, in your credit report, if you saw that your score went from 750 to 620, that means something to you. And one of the things it means is you're going to have to pay more to borrow money if you can qualify to borrow money. That's right. Not a position we want to be in my opinion. We don't want to be in a position as a country where it's more expensive to borrow and more difficult to borrow, right?
Yeah,
in other
for
words,
sure.
Where we're talking about those U.S. Treasury bonds that people buy, right? That's that is what our debt is. Who wants to buy a U.S. Treasury bond from a company or a country, excuse me, that has just been downgraded, right? You're taking more risk. And the whole point of you buying those bonds is to mitigate your risk. So that's where I'm at with, you know, what could happen here. Now, what does that mean in your pocket? It means that cheaper borrowing could make prices worse. Okay, here's another analogy. A regular old world, we all know how to do this analogy, okay? If you have lower interest rates, we make them available to everybody, right? It's easier for you to borrow, which means you spend. So more people spending money increases the demand. You've got a store with 10 TVs. And 30 people want them.
Yeah.
They're going to bid each other up. Okay.
Yeah.
The same thing is concern about the country, but for our pocketbooks, that means the lower prices could drive inflation up. It's called demand pull inflation, right? So that's kind of a scary thing because that's exactly what could be happening here. And we also talked just about short term. You know, he's asking for them to drop the short-term rates. But at the beginning of the show, I said, beware, because your long-term rates could be going in the opposite direction.
Right? So what's happening there?
So short-term rates are directly affected by the Fed. They move very quickly. When the Fed says we're going to change the rate on short-term interest, they're going to, you know, your car rate or your one-year loan is going to change almost instantly. They're very fluid. Long-term rates, things like mortgages, for instance, those are based on how investors feel about the future.
Okay.
Because they're looking at 20, 30, 15 years out or whatever. That's a completely different situation. So sometimes, often, when the Fed drops the rate, short-term rates go down, but long-term rates can either stay the same or actually go up. So, not good.
And so so then that leads to less people buying houses or buying things long-term, right?
Right. And so if we do this long enough, poorly enough, this could lead to stagflation, right?
What does stagflation mean?
Stagflation is when the economy sort of stagnates, right? Our job situation is getting a little weaker right now. If we have high inflation and low employment, right, we're stagnant. We're just sitting there. So stagflation is due when you get that high inflation, but nothing else is keeping up with it. And it's a scary term. Yeah, a little bit.
So I know things are changing minute by minute all the time with the news, but when do we know whether Jerome is going to make this decision or not? Trump is pushing for it, right? But that doesn't mean it's happening.
That's right. And I think it would be really astonishing to see Jerome Powell do this. I mean, I might see him push to 0.5% or maybe even 0.75% drop over a period of time, sequentially quarter, something like that. Mm-hmm. But I think what's really on the table here is whether Jerome Powell is going to be the one making this decision or not.
Okay. You know,
who will his replacement be? What relationship will Trump have with that replacement? Will they be put in place simply to get this done? When we zoom out from this, Jess, because I don't want to make this a political conversation. There's no way to avoid talking about the government when you're talking about what's going on here. But but whatever somebody's political preferences are is up to them. I'm just trying to get people to understand the money part of this, right? When you zoom out and you look at this and you think about the fact that we don't live in a bubble here in the U.S., right? It's a tiny little world now. Everybody's connected. Mm-hmm. If it hits the news wire that the Fed of the U.S. government dropped a rate overnight from 4.25% or even over a few months period from 4.25% to 1%, in my opinion, it will be a self-fulfilling prophecy. In other words, we may not be in an emergency situation, but it will look as though... Yeah, it will look
people
as
will panic.
Yeah, I mean, it will look as though somebody behind the scenes knew something catastrophic was coming and they were trying to prepare for it. And then it will have that domino effect, that ripple effect, right? You think of a run on the bank when that movie, It's a Wonderful Life, that old black and white movie, It's a Wonderful Life. As soon as word gets out that there's, you know, a run, somebody's concerned about the bank. Then people panic and they start doing that. And that's the kind of thing I worry about when you see this sort of move, right? I just want to drive home this point about debt again, I think, briefly, because the reason I'm talking about this is I think it's so valuable for the average person, everybody, right, to really understand what the heck this means, not just the little soundbite of, if the rates drop, I might have to pay more for gas. But how this government is running and what the Federal Reserve decision means and whether they should just agree with Trump, not agree with Trump, why, right? So here's a human example. Imagine you make $60,000 a year.
Okay.
But you've built up $300,000 in debt. Now, I know you're saying, I'd never have $300,000 in debt on $60,000 a year. You might.
Because probably from a mortgage and cars and stuff, right?
That's right. And that number, those examples are not that far out of whack when we're talking about the United States debt.
right, in relation to what we bring in, the amount of debt we have is so enormous, right? So instead of paying that debt down, you just keep rolling it into new loans, lower interest rates. You know, even if you get a better rate, you still have this mountain of debt that doesn't go away. Mm-hmm. If rates rise again or your income drops, you're in big trouble. Now, the government is not immune to those two things. Rates rise and income drops, right?
Mm-hmm.
We just, it's so parallel to your household finances, but it never sounds that way when they're talking about, you know, whatever the generic financial terms are that make everybody nervous. It never sounds like that. So, you know, lowering these rates is like putting a little bandage on a giant wound. It might help for a while, but it's not going to fix the real problem.
And this is something that's getting pushed now. So it could happen at any time or it could not.
That's right. It could not. I mean, the reason I did this show is because even if this doesn't happen, I hope somebody learned not to be afraid of this stuff and to look at it as though it were your own household finances and to understand what that debt really is. The debt is really the treasury bonds that the U.S. sells that other people are buying to mitigate their risk. So we need to look and behave like a safe haven, or we won't be able to do that. And it's a downward spiral from that point.
I think breaking it down to like your household, it does make it so much easier to understand. So thank you for doing that for sure.
I hope so.
All right, let me get your phone number.
Sure. It's 413-773-3333.
And you can go to hugyourmoney.com. We'll be back next week with another edition of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram on WHMP. Thank you.
Thank you, Jess.
Will you help us spread the word about financial fitness? Please like, subscribe, and choose all. Thank you. Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor is underwritten by
Hug Your Money, it's where you belong. Your future's waiting steady and strong. Dignity shines in the small. Mission.